I have a dream.
One small step.
How may we say
that the wall must go.
Diner, Princess of Wales.
Into the World Trade Center.
Winner is Sydney.
This week in history.
Now, imagine sitting on your horse, armed with perhaps a sabre or a lance, about to charge down a narrow valley where you're going to be shot at with cannon and rifle fire. Imagine knowing that if you followed the orders of your superiors and charged down this valley, that there was a very good chance you'd be killed, and that in all probability the charge was doomed to fail anyway. You're probably terrified, perhaps angry at the orders that were sending you to your death. Or perhaps there'd be reasons you would embrace the chance to take on your enemy, even if the chance of death was high. Maybe you'd be itching to have a go at the enemy. Well, this is the story of a group of light cavalry who were part of Britain's forces in the Crimea, in the war that took place there in 1854. The war's famous for the work done by Florence Nightingale, who went on to revolutionise nursing, of course. And it's also famous for this moment when these men and their horses set off down this valley in what's become known as the Charge of the Light Brigade. Now, the charge has traditionally gone down in history as a failure and a waste of lives, with 118 men killed and 127 wounded. But our guest tonight has some different ideas about the Charge of the Light Brigade. It took place this week in history on October the 25th, 1854. And our guest is Hugh Small, author of a book called The Crimean War. Hugh joins us from the UK tonight. Hello, Hugh, and welcome to This Week in History.
Hello, India. Glad to be.
Fabulous to have you. Now, can we get a quick explanation, if that's possible, about exactly where Crimea is and why there was a war there in the 1850s?
Crimea is a peninsula in the Black Sea in Eastern Europe. Russia captured it from the Ottoman Empire about 60 years before this. They'd built a big naval base and arsenal there at Sebastopol. They were using their naval power to expand the Russian Empire. And the Crimean War started when they invaded the Ottoman Empire in the province of Romania on the Black Sea coast. Britain and France decided to drive them out and then to neutralize the naval base at Sebastopol in Crimea.
And so who lined up on which side once the fighting began, Hugh?
Most European countries were in favour of Britain and France declaring war on Russia because they didn't like Russia's continuing expansion in Europe and elsewhere. Five of the European countries were known as the Great Powers. They were Britain, France, Prussia, Russia, and the Austrian Empire. Only Prussia stayed neutral. Of the smaller countries, Italy, which was then known as Sardinia, sent an army. So in terms of fighting, it was Britain, France, Sardinia, and Turkey against Russia on its own.
So how did the war progress then between October 1853, when the Ottomans declared war on Russia, and October 1854, which is when the Charge of the Light Brigade took place?
So the Allies got involved early in 1854 and sent armies to drive the Russians out of Romania. But the Turks did that on their own, so the Allies then re-embarked and invaded Crimea. They landed near the Russian base at Sebastopol.
Okay, and the Charge of the Light Brigade, Hugh, took place as part of the Battle of Balaclava. Where did this battle fit into the Allies' overall plan of attack?
Well, it wasn't part of the Allies' plan. It was a Russian attack on the port of Balaclava, which the British had commandeered. It was a very weak British position because it was miles away from the main Allied armies, so it was a sensible target for the Russians.
And before we get into the Charge of the Light Brigade itself then, Hugh, just explain some of these terms to us. So a light brigade was a cavalry brigade, meaning they were on horses. But what's the difference between a light brigade and a heavy brigade?
By this time, there wasn't really much difference anymore. Previously, the heavies would have had bigger horses, heavier arms and accoutrements, etc. But now I think the only remaining difference was that the heavies were supposed to have taller men. But by the way, it's not well known that the heavy brigade had exactly the same orders as the light brigade. Both brigades advanced down the valley, but when they came under fire, the heavies stopped while the light brigade went on and turned it into a cavalry charge.
Ah, right.
That's why it ended up being a light brigade event.
Right, I see. So let's drill down into the enemy here, because while they were nominally fighting the Russians, some of these guys were Cossacks. Now, who exactly were the Cossacks and what kind of reputation did they have, Hugh?
Well, there was a big contingent of Russian cavalry in the field. Well, some of them were well-trained regular cavalry, but many of them were Russian Cossacks from the steppes who were more like irregular cavalry. The Cossacks weren't trained to fight together in formation, unlike the British cavalry and the Russian regulars, but took advantage. The Cossacks would take advantage of any weakness, like attacking stragglers or retreating troops.
Right, so they were tough. They were tough enemies.
They were very irritating enemies and widely despised, I may say, by the British cavalry who for their indiscipline and their cruelty.
Okay. So, Hugh, what's the traditional story about what happened? The story that says this was all a communications blunder?
Well, there was a communications blunder, but it doesn't explain the mystery. The Commander-in-Chief, Lord Raglan, sent the cavalry a written order to advance against the enemy. But the precise objectives weren't clear because the situation had changed a lot since it was written.
Right.
It told them to stop the enemy carrying away some guns. But it didn't clarify that these were British guns that had been captured by the Russians, who had by now already taken them away to Sevastopol. Communications blunders, if you like to call it that, were common at the time because orders carried by horsemen were often out of date, which is why commanders were supposed to use their discretion. Most of Raglan's orders that day were ignored or countermanded by local commanders. So the mystery is, when the two cavalry commanders, Lucan and Cardigan, got a written order that didn't make sense, why did they try to obey it? And the accepted story seems to be that they hated each other so much that they weren't able to talk it through.
And this story says that the men were basically sacrificed by incompetence, hostility and pride.
Yes, and if you like, by the poor social skills of the decadent aristocracy.
Does that tie into their two leaders at the time?
They did have a lot of family issues between them. They were jealous of each other because I think Cardigan wanted to be the commander of the whole cavalry division and Lucan got the gig and Cardigan became his subordinate, which was very galling for him. So there was a lot going on. But this story that they hated each other so much, it's like a kind of a soap opera version of the truth. You know, they were actually very, very formal and respectful towards each other. You know, it's a very weak explanation, I think, that it was caused by their personal difficulties.
Okay.
There are other reasons why they obeyed, which no doubt we'll come to.
We will. And this story, Hugh, also had a giant leg up over the past 170 years, thanks to Alfred Lord Tennyson, because he wrote that famous poem about it, didn't he?
Yes, and that's why nearly everybody's heard of the Charge of the Light Brigade, but only because of the poem. They don't know anything except what's in the poem, right or wrong. And the message of the poem also is that it was a noble thing for the soldiers to obey a suicidal order. Well, by modern values, that's completely wrong. And, you know, I think it's a shame that this poem is even still taught in schools.
Yeah, okay. So the traditional story, Hugh, at least the one that's gained hold in popular mythology, is the one we've just mentioned. So let's unpick it a bit, because you think that ultimately this was a military success that the British cavalry were itching to be part of. And Tennyson's poem talks about attacking the guns. Now, tell us what is known about what the charge was actually aiming for.
Yes, the poem goes, "Charge for the guns," he said. But while I was writing my book on the Crimean War in 2007, a new eyewitness account was discovered, a very important account. It was a letter written to his wife by the officer commanding one of the five regiments of the Light Brigade. This Captain Morris was the only person apart from Lord Lucan to talk to the messenger who'd just delivered the order. After the battle, Morris told his wife they'd been ordered to attack the Russian cavalry. He didn't mention the guns. Now, we don't know whether he got this from the messenger or just assumed the cavalry was the logical target. Cardigan certainly didn't brief his subordinates on any objective. Tennyson sort of made up that line about charging for the guns because the official report did say that some guns had been involved, but certainly not the guns that the Light Brigade ran into when they got to the end of the valley.
What was the charge actually aiming for then?
Well, it was part of a plan that Lord Raglan had to beat the Russian army, first of all by mobilizing his artillery, his infantry. There were two divisions of infantry just over the hill who'd been told to attack at the same time as the cavalry. And the idea of the cavalry charge, or cavalry entering the action, was to stop the Russian cavalry, who were numerous, from attacking the British infantry as the British infantry advanced on the Russian infantry. So that it was all part of a plan that was never actually written down, but orders were sent to both the infantry and the cavalry to begin this this assault, but only part of the cavalry obeyed. That's what happened. And so the whole object of the exercise, from the strategic point of view, was not really carried out.
You're listening to ABC Radio, and this is Nightlife with Indira and I Do. And for our This Week in History, we're discussing the charge of the Light Brigade. And my guest is Hugh Small, author of The Crimean War. And he's taking us through what actually really happened and separating the myth from the fact. Well, Hugh, you also say that even knowing the risks and the fruitlessness of the charge, that the men of the Light Brigade wanted to charge down the valley. Why would they have wanted to do that?
Well, one of the reasons, India, is that the cavalry was actually dying of cholera, which had become a global pandemic in 1854.
Right.
About 4% of them were dying each month, and there was no financial provision yet for the families of soldiers who died of sickness. Death in battle or a serious wound in battle did qualify for a pension. Only about 1 in 6 of those who took part in the charge were killed, but for the survivors, the odds of dying from sickness turned out to be worse, 1 in 4 at least, and would have seemed worse still at the time because cholera was then at its peak. So the prospect of death or injury in battle wouldn't have seemed quite so frightening.
And Hugh, I understand the irony is that despite the Light Brigade throwing itself at the Cossacks that day, a fair few of them didn't die at Russian hands, but did indeed go on to die from cholera, just as they feared.
Yes, and as I say, about just looking at the statistics of, we don't know particularly the outcome for each of the survivors, but looking at the general statistics of death in the cavalry and the army in the rest of the war, which lasted almost 2 years, a greater number of them would have died of sickness, according to the probabilities, which was the worst problem in the Crimean War. I mean, the British had something like 4,000 people killed in battle and about 16,000 who died of sickness. This was the big scandal of the war, of course, that Florence Nightingale set her mind to rectifying after the war was over.
And there's some talk, isn't there, that if the Light Brigade had already been able to fight the Cossacks on different occasions, they may not have been so keen on this one, but they wanted to get in there, didn't they?
Yes, the Light Brigade did have a major grudge against the Cossacks, because weeks before this, the London newspapers had reported to everybody, to the Russians in St. Petersburg as well, that the Cossacks had mocked the Light Brigade for refusing to fight when their commanders had been holding them back. On the day of the charge, only the Heavy Brigade had been in action, doing very well indeed against the Russian regular cavalry. The Light Brigade had done nothing since they arrived in the war zone months before. After the Heavy Brigade had done its bit, the Cossacks had started to kill Turkish soldiers who were trying to surrender right under the noses of the Light Brigade, who were forbidden to intervene. Cossacks had even brazenly ridden into the empty British cavalry camp and mutilated sick horses left behind. No real cavalryman could tolerate that. There was mutiny brewing in the Light Brigade over the missed opportunities. And one of the troublemakers was the same Captain Morris, who later told his wife they'd been attacking the Russian cavalry.
Right.
Morris had a public spat with Lord Cardigan. He angrily demanded that Cardigan allow his regiment alone to attack the Russians, and Cardigan refused.
And there are even stories, Hugh, about men who were ordered not to be part of the charge sneaking back into the lines. And tell us about those stories.
Well, as soon as it became known that the cavalry was going to attack, several people joined in who weren't supposed to. One of them was a butcher who grabbed the weapons and horse of a dead trooper and joined the ranks still wearing his blood-stained apron. Two prisoners took the opportunity to escape from the guard tent. They stole horses and lined up with the others. But the most moving story, I think, is of Sergeant Williams, who was put under arrest for smoking as they were getting ready. He refused to fall out and was stripped of his weapons. He still refused to fall out. He rode unarmed into the charge and was killed. So it was apparently a very popular order.
So, Hugh, explain to us what happened as the horses set off into the valley again. There's evidence that the riders were in no way reluctant, but were in fact going as fast as they could, anxious to get to the Cossacks.
Yeah, part of it was deliberate, but also, deliberate increase in pace. They were shouting to each other to go faster, the ordinary soldiers. It's true that cavalrymen and horses, on the other hand, get excited, both men and horses, and they find it hard to control their speed in a situation like that. And this can make them hard to stop when the situation changes. Cardigan actually tried to slow down the light brigade, but failed. Lucan, who was behind with the heavy brigade, had less trouble stopping them when they started losing too many men to enemy fire. But so the light brigade just didn't seem to want to stop, as cavalry are supposed to do when they meet too much resistance. And that's one of the kind of rules of cavalry actions. It starts off as a probe, and if successful, it can lead to a charge. But if there's too much, if it turns out to be too difficult, they're trained to stay under control. And keeping them under control is one of the great talents of the commander. It's a very difficult thing to do.
I can imagine with the speed of those horses and the strength and momentum, it's a difficult thing to control that. But, Hugh, you reckon almost that whatever the official orders were, and probably most of them had no idea what they were actually meant to be aiming at, the brigade just took their moment to go after the Cossacks and basically wrote their own orders.
Yes, I mean, everybody from the generals downwards knew that the light brigade was gagging to give the Russian cavalry a beating. They didn't need precise orders. So they just left them to it, I think. Nobody explained. Lucan and Cardigan didn't bother to explain what was supposed to happen. They knew what was going to happen because the light brigade was, if you like, calling the shots.
And do we know, Hugh, if some of the men saw this as a suicide mission?
Well, yes, it is true that a minority of junior officers and troopers afterwards did go along with Tennyson's poem and claimed that they and all their comrades saw the attack as useless and suicidal. But this minority of dissenters tend to be the ones who are well off decades later when funds were being organised to raise money for the survivors, most of whom were living in poverty. And the senior officers were famously tight-lipped afterwards about the charge, including Captain Morris. I think it was noble of the officers, actually, to allow the generous public to believe it had been their own incompetence rather than the indiscipline of the men that had got them into trouble. They were playing their part for regimental solidarity, if you like, the officers, by keeping quiet and not giving their side of the story.
Right. So, Hugh, what happened? I mean, how did it get to the point of saying that this was actually a victory then?
Well, the charge of the Light Brigade wasn't a failure, as you called it in your intro. It ended very well for the Light Brigade. They went straight past the guns and into the Cossacks behind. The Cossacks had never faced such a terrible enemy. And they panicked and fired their carbines towards their own regular cavalry behind them to clear the way out. The whole of the Russian cavalry, which outnumbered the Light Brigade 10-1, then turned and fled with the Light Brigade on their heels. So it's not true to say that the charge failed, but the whole battle, and I hold that it was a victory because of that, but the whole battle was not a victory because the infantry commander disobeyed Raglan's order to attack at the same time. The charge was a victory, not in terms of the number of men killed or anything like body counts. In any case, mass slaughter was not the name of the game in warfare in those days. The idea was to frighten the enemy off the battlefield before serious damage was done. But the charge, I think, alone was a victory because it showed the government at home that the British cavalry, as well as just the infantry, were far superior to their Russian equivalents. What was needed was a campaign in open country that would play to these strengths. The commanders in Crimea were following a different strategy, a siege strategy that actually played to the Russian strengths in heavy artillery. And the British government, after the charge, the British government and Queen Victoria herself agreed there should be a change of strategy. they ordered the commander-in-chief in the Crimea to abandon the siege of Sevastopol and attack the Russian armies in the field instead. And the French emperor gave exactly the same order to his commander. Unfortunately, the generals disobeyed these political instructions and the war ended indecisively. But that doesn't make the charge of the Light Brigade any less of a victory. The charge showed the politicians and generals how to win the war. And from this time on, the influence of the aristocracy in British politics began to decline.
So the charge, in your eyes, was a victory in what it set out to do, even though the superiors didn't follow through.
Yes, and I'm afraid the whole story hasn't really penetrated the public consciousness, who still rely on the poem.
Yeah, and does the story of the 600 charging into the valley to get the guns, sacrificed by their superiors, still hold sway today? I mean, as you said, you'd like to see that Tennyson poem not taught in schools.
Yes, I'm afraid the poem must be still compulsory to learn in school, which I think it's a pity, because the whole affair is so well documented, Indira, that it can help shed light on social history as well. It lets us see into the minds of the common soldiers and understand the increasing confidence at that time of Britain's working class. Also, I mean, the poem says, "Theirs not to reason why, theirs but to do or die." I mean, we all know that's wrong, don't we? I mean, from Hitler's war, if nothing else, we know that it's not the soldier's duty to implement any order at all that he receives from above. What I find distressing is that during the First World War, this poem was quoted extensively by soldiers as an explanation of why they were going over the top to their almost certain deaths. I found one letter in the Times from a squaddy at Gallipoli, in fact, which of course is an action to remember, particularly in Australia. But this squaddy said that their regiment went into the battle knowing that most of them were going to be killed, and quoting Tennyson's poem as a justification. So I think Lord Tennyson, I'm afraid, has a lot to answer for.
So, Hugh, in your eyes, whose interest is it in to keep this myth perpetuating?
Well, it's kind of supports the theory, look, we're in charge, so shut up, you know. Basically, that's often the hierarchy's silencing dissent. But, I mean, the Victorian Britain was kind of dependent on dissent, and most of the economic growth and so on was attributed to people who were, you know, dissenters in the proper meaning of the term. They wouldn't follow the church hierarchy, but they had much more energy than the people who did. The poem is still in the interest of the authorities, if you like, the establishment. That's why I'm sorry that it's still taught in schools, because it just reinforces this old viewpoint, which is way out of date.
Mm. Hugh, thank you so much for talking to us on Nightlife tonight.
All right. It's been a pleasure, Indira. Thanks very much.
Hugh Small, author of The Crimean War, shedding some light, exploding some myths surrounding that very famous charge of the Light Brigade that happened this week in history in 1854.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.